When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Whoa, howdy there, folks, and welcome into today's video. Hope you guys are doing great out there. As always, welcome into Millennial Money, where we have so much to talk about here tonight. Bad news, good news, middle news, everything in between. But first off, we got to start out with Kevin and Andre. Both of them are sick, and we're trying to figure out, do you have the Roni Rona? Do you not have the Roni Rona? What's going on? Kevin was just in Vegas, and he saw Graham and me, and so now I'm like, do I have the Roni Rona? What's going on? So, Kevin, Andre, let's start with you, and then let's get up to Kevin, and we got to figure out that first.
How you were like, they're sick. It's just like, what? Yeah, I'm you know, got to collect them all, the Delta variant. Thankfully.
Oh, I'm on Lambda.
No, thankfully I don't have anything. I didn't get tested, but Corey, my girlfriend, who got me sick, she got me sick. She got tested. She tested negative. So I'm just going to assume that I'm negative, but I should go get tested. I don't think I have COVID. I still have my taste buds intact, so everything's fine. But yeah, just a general fatigue. I think it's just a classic cold. I don't think it's anything crazy, but it still sucks. It doesn't feel good. Yeah.
Okay. Kevin?
Yeah. Yeah, I've just had this dry cough forever. And like, I've been just anytime I try to cough, I try to like bring a mask or whatever, but to try to like be respectful. But it's just been this lingering thing. And I don't know, it's just been lingering for like, I don't know, since the day after I got from New York. And I've been tested twice, negative both times for COVID, just lingering cough. And then all of a sudden I get back from Vegas. And it wasn't even that bad in Vegas, just this tiny little lingering cough. It's like, whatever. It's just going to be one of those things that lingers forever. But all of a sudden today I wake up and it's like 10 times worse than before. Wow. What's happening?
Yeah. You guys should be getting tested though. At least again.
I got home tests now. So I got tested twice, like the things or whatever. But now they have home tests. Can you believe that? You stick them in like a pregnancy test.
Yeah, I have one. I still have it. I need to use that. I did get one though.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Cool. How accurate is that, though?
That's what I was wondering.
I think if you're symptomatic, it should be pretty accurate. I mean, for you to be symptomatic, you usually have such an overproduction disaster that I feel like it should pick up pretty fast. But I mean, I'm no doctor. I mean, what do I know? But you know, we bought a couple different variety packs, you know, and the Flintstone vitamins. Yeah,
not sponsored. Flintstones, shout us out, man. No. Give us that money and we'll put you in every episode. So
what are they, like tattoo chef inspired or something?
Hey, Kevin, have you told anybody that I made you a tattoo chef bowl when you're out here?
You know, I gotta post that video, man. I've been so out of it, I haven't done anything.
No, don't worry, Kevin, I'm gonna be posting it. We got the vlog, I think, posting tomorrow. That includes you eating the chef.
Oh man.
Good.
Stay tuned. That's all I got to say. Stay tuned, okay? So, anyways, let's talk about this. I think we got to talk about the crypto hack right from the jump. And I saw your post, Andre, about centralized finance and why it is still going to be tough to go DeFi anytime soon because of situations like this. So can you explain to folks what actually happened here and the whole drama with that?
Yeah, so there's a decentralized exchange called Polygon Network, which is not related to Polygon. That's a separate thing that's very popular. And they lost $273 million of Ethereum, $253 million of Binance smart tokens, and another $85 million of USDC. So They just completely lost it. And the thing about losing money on DeFi is that once it's gone, it's kind of gone forever. And that's why I made the post this morning, was like, this is why CeFi is going to be around, because if money's lost there, at least you can recover your funds somehow from a company. But with DeFi, there is actually two ways of getting that money back. But before we get into that, I just want to know your guys' thoughts, if you guys even heard about this.
Yeah, I was doing research on it earlier. I was trying to figure out exactly how they were able to do it. And in my understanding is that they exploited a loophole in the smart contract as a way to like maybe forge a signature, or they were able to get like a private key. They basically obtained information that was allowing them to be the recipient of these funds, transfer that to themselves, and then just disappear.
Yeah, the technical like hack, and I don't know exactly like how they did it, because I'm not very technical, like technically savvy to that degree. It wasn't that the private key was leaked, because remember, if anybody has your private key, they have access to your wallet. It wasn't that the private key was leaked. It was that they basically, gosh, I don't even know how to explain it. They made themselves the key holder. They like redirected the identity of whoever that person was supposed to be to themselves. Mm. And they did a crazy exploit where it's like they redirected the identity of whatever person is supposed to keep the money safe to themselves. And one of the ways of doing that is like, if you guys, I don't know if you guys have heard multi-sig contracts, like smart contracts, multi-sig works like this. Like if we all made a smart contract together to make sure that any one of us wouldn't get compromised, like, you know, if Graham was offered millions of dollars to like, you know, give up some money, we would all have a signature to sign on a smart contract. And without all four signatures, that contract would not be able to execute. And that's one of the precautions that smart contracts take is multi-sig. But in this exploit, somehow the attacker was able to redirect this role to himself. And beyond that, it gets so technically complicated, I can't even understand it. So
now here's the thing. This is where I kind of lose it here, but they identified which wallet this is in. So they know like where the funds went. They don't know who that wallet belongs to, but they know which wallet it's in. Who's to say that like this wallet can't go and cash it out? Because they would know where there would be a way to track at some point where the funds are going. So wouldn't this person eventually get caught?
Yeah. So the crypto analyst company, they actually, I forget their names, but they found this person's IP address.
Yeah.
They found the fingerprint of the device and the email address that this person, you know, has. So in theory, they should not be able to get away with moving it. And one of the precautionary things that actually happened was Tether. So Tether froze, I think, a $30 million transfer. So, you know, Tether is a centralized stablecoin. So Tether was able to stop the transferring or the exchanging. But some of the other coins, if theoretically they were able to somehow like exchange it to Monero, which is another cryptocurrency, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of.
Yeah.
Monero is supposed to be one of the only true super anonymous cryptos. So if that person is able to convert it to Monero, then they're basically like they can get away with it. But there is two ways to get our money back. And the first one is exactly what Graham just said, which is to catch the person, right? Like while they're trying to transfer something. And the second way actually happened in 2016 with Ethereum, where somebody stole $50 million of Ethereum. And instead of trying to find the guy who did it, Ethereum hard forked into two separate chains. In one fork, the attacker just got away with everything, right? They're rich, they're successful. And the other fork, Ethereum reversed the transaction. And so in that fork, that was Ethereum, ETH, as we know it today. In the other fork, that's ETC, Ethereum Classic. So that was the creation of Ethereum Classic. The reason that Ethereum Classic was created was because it was a reverse transaction of a major hack. And so in this case, everyone could get their money back, assuming that all of the cryptos involved would hard fork into two different paths. But there's a huge problem doing that, because then everybody's like, no, you know, you're not supposed to change crypto. It's supposed to be immutable. And there's a huge political rift. But that's essentially how you could get your money back. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. So hard fork, not going to happen. Catching the person is really the goal. But because this is DeFi, where is the money right now? Is it sitting in some kind of DeFi wallet, or where is it?
I haven't tracked it. I'm not sure where it's sitting now. I'm sure he's moving it right now, trying to get away with it, but I don't know exactly where the money's sitting right now. But well, in theory, it's very hard to like, try to steal it.
I have two questions here, Andre. One is, I thought everything was going to be trackable on the blockchain, so couldn't they use a blockchain somehow? And then the second part I have, that's kind of a question here, is this really something that an individual could have done, or is this more like a squad, like a team, like 10 or 15, 20 people all working together on this?
Yeah, to answer the first question, at this point we know his wallets, so we know all the, like, the outputs, so we could go on like Etherscan or Ethscan and we can actually see the wallets. I don't have them like loaded up, but you can see how he's moving the money, so you can literally track at this point what he's doing with it. So that's a major problem for him. And the second question is, I think it's definitely an individual. I don't think it's like a team effort. It's not a particularly team intensive effect. Now Poly Network did publish the article of like how it happened. And I tried to understand it, but I'll be honest with you, I don't understand the technicality of how it was done. It's so like complicated that I don't follow it.
Dude, that's nuts. I mean, when you really break it down, because we're talking about, what was it, $600 million or whatever, and you take that into any other illegal vertical, and there's no way one person could even dream of doing that, right? Think about like, like a cartel or something like that, like moving all this product. Like even those guys, it's like teams and like so well connected and like everything's plotted out. And like one individual does this, that's just crazy, man.
Yeah, a lot of people thought it was like an inside job. They were like, oh, that's got to be a private key that was leaked. But upon a examination from some crypto analyst company, which I have the name of it, I don't remember offhand what it is. They published a whole report of what actually happened, and it didn't look like it was like a team effort or anything.
Yeah, so. What is concerning about just the DeFi aspect of it, which I know centralized finance is different, but centralized finance, really, then you're just relying on the company to cover the bill, right? Like if this happened on BlockFi, you're just like, well, BlockFi, can you like reimburse me because you guys effed up? So you have like at least a method, like you could sue BlockFi or whatever, right? But like, you know what kind of makes me nervous is I know they posted this on Twitter, but it's just kind of like, and I know they're doing more. They're doing more. Yeah, this. Dear hacker. This is a joke, right? Yeah. Dear hacker, we are the Poly Network team. We want to establish communication with you and urge you to return the hacked assets. The amount of money you hacked is the biggest hack in history. It's like, really?
That's almost a compliment. Okay. Like, you did the biggest hack in history. Well, bravo.
Sorry, I thought you were showing a phishing email. So this is a legit thing that the Poly Network team sent?
They put that on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And wait, so I'll let Kevin finish this. And the hacker actually has a message back.
Okay. Oh, does he? Where's the hacker message back?
I'll tell you in a sec.
Oh, okay. Well, so anyway, law enforcement in any country will regard this as a major economic crime. Maybe not, though. We'll see, ironically. That's the whole point of like DeFi, I feel like, is it's supposed to be separate from law enforcement and government. But anyway, it is still theft. And you will be pursued. It's also kind of interesting, like what people are going to like chase you down the road. It is very unwise for you to do any further transactions. The money you stole are. Wouldn't it be is? The money you stole is from I'm pretty sure it's the money you stole is from tens of thousands of crypto community members.
Tens of thousands. Man. I don't know. The whole English, you would think it's weird. They would have somebody revise this and just be like, hey,
That makes them look well. That honestly, that's such a bad messaging. Like, that's such bad messaging. It looks like they're complicit in it. Like that.
What I thought. It makes them sound guilty because it's like such a silly, like, look at us. We're going to send a message on Twitter. Kevin, and then I sent you a text. Now you can put the hacker's response on here. Kind of interesting. Somebody, by the way, warned the hacker and said, hey, by the way, don't do anything with Tether. They're going to be able to track you like that. He sent the person back 13.37 Ethereum, which is like 45 grand. $45,000 as a thank you for just warning him. 13.37, which is...
Wait. Say this about 1337 again, because that's my favorite number ever.
So somebody warned the hacker that Tether was being shut down and not to spend it because they would be able to track it.
Right.
So he sent that person back who warned him 13.37 Ethereum. $45,000 just for warning him.
Which that's a lead tip.
For anybody wondering, the reason 1337 I feel like it was really popularized. Well, certainly in gaming culture, RuneScape, very, very popular in RuneScape. Hacker culture, very popular. 1337, if you translate it to letters, would be L-E-E-T, which is like elite or leet. But anyway, I got that hacker message up. So I'm going to go ahead and put that response back. Andre, maybe you can help add some color to this. So it says here, input, I don't really understand what's going on here. It looks like a transaction commentary here or whatever. It would have been a billion hack if I had moved remaining S coins. Explicit here. Did I just save the project? Not so interested in money. Now considering returning some tokens or just leaving them here. So it's almost like this person's trying to send a message. I feel like that's what hackers do, though, to maybe try to to minimize consequences to them. I'm doing this as a social service.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, if this guy gets caught, is he going to jail for life? Like, what is the penalty on this situation? Like, if he's actually caught?
Great question. So I'm guessing
is theft of DeFi a crime? Mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, like, is it recognized as an asset?
He could argue, and he's got the money now. He could argue that he found an exploit. And he took advantage of it. Is finding a loophole or an exploit, is that a crime on the DeFi network? Should be, but is it?
Who in DeFi says something is a crime? Isn't crime by definition something government tells you not to do?
You know, look, I love DeFi. I do think it's the future, but I thought it was really funny and unfortunate in a way that DeFi is kind of like the teenage kid who lives with his parents. It's like, I want to move out. And it's like, all right, move out, do your thing. And now it's like, wait, I'm broke. I need help. And so the DeFi community actually needs help from these centralized agencies from, our government or from centralized finance to help revert this transaction, which I think is kind of ironic and unfortunate. And also why I don't think centralized finance is going anywhere. And also
Did this just bankrupt DeFi? Or what?
No. This is just one DeFi platform out of many, many decentralized platforms.
So why do they? Oh, so you're saying this platform needs help?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm just saying the whole situation is just kind of ironic.
That's true. Yeah. But couldn't they go to other I don't know, maybe they're DeFi, other DeFi platforms that have really good forensics or whatever, and maybe they can help. But maybe there's a DeFi forensics.
For sure. The problem is, though, is there's always going to be that risk of what God knows what exploit there could happen, and the benefit of DeFi is, besides, the KYC, know your customer laws, that you could just go around, you could just make a wallet. You don't need your social security. You don't need an address, no email. You just get started right away. It kind of makes evading taxes possible. I'm not saying you should do that. I think you should pay your taxes, but a lot of that appeals to a lot of people. But the problem is, even though you're going to get a crazy high interest rate on these DeFi platforms, I've seen interest rates of upwards of 10% that you can get paid on stablecoins. I've seen crazy numbers. And the risk you're taking is that there is at least 1% chance that 100% of your money could disappear. That's not a risk I'm willing to take, which is why I don't really promote DeFi as much as I do the BlockFi's, the Gemini, the Coinbase's. It just makes more sense to be a little bit safer.
Yeah, who's really using these DeFi platforms? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Because, most people that I know are using Coinbase or other platforms like that. So I'm just curious, who's actually using that?
That would be the bigger brokerages like the Coinbases, like the Geminis. BlockFi doesn't use it, but some of the bigger businesses that are a little bit more nuanced and a little bit more, intricate with their knowledge of crypto, they use that stuff and they yield farm. And so they could deposit their stuff on a reputable DeFi exchange, get that 10%, keep 5% for themselves and pay 5% Ethereum deposits or whatever deposits for customers. So they're yield farming themselves and then passing off the difference to their customers.
Wow, man.
Yeah. Or really sophisticated individuals that understand this stuff and want to take that risk, which I'm not one of those people.
Whoa. Wow. That's crazy, man. If it's really just one person did this, it just makes me think I would assume every terrorist organization, everybody's going to be looking into this and potentially trying to do something, right? Because if it's that easy, one guy did it, why can't we get a crew of 5 or 10 experts? So I don't know. It's not a good look. That's all I know.
I'm guessing that tweet that he sent out just meant if he actually stole all the other coins that were smaller cap, then that hack would have been, you know, over $1 billion. And I'm not sure exactly what he means, like he's trying to help the project, whether he's referring to the network, to the decentralized exchange, or the actual cryptos. I'm not sure what he means.
It seems like he's talking about the actual crypto, because I mean, he's already done damage to the DeFi network in the sense that right. Now we're going to be paranoid about security.
Right.
Even if it's fixed, they're like, well, what else is out there? It's obviously a really smart guy. So he's going to be able to find some way to do it again. But I think just the end goal of this is like, how do you cash out of that? Now, I've heard that you could transfer that over to Monero and maybe try to disappear. But I think all of it, right, that eventually you'd be able to trace that back.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'm just curious.
I don't know about that.
Regulation. Like, how are they going to save people's money? Like, I have no idea how they're going to get their money back.
Yeah, but yeah, how people who lost their money are going to get their money back, I don't know. But, you know, here's the reality is if even where the money is now, I just feel like all it would take is sending the money to certain people's addresses or getting into Monero or whatever. And then they have, what are they called? The crypto treasurer people. And they're crypto treasurer people. The Wall Street Journal did a whole thing on them. Or basically the whole purpose they exist is to take people's hot crypto, like stolen crypto, and then go bury cash somewhere. So it's like, oh, send me $100,000 in crypto. I'll go bury $80,000 of cash behind this tree in this park or whatever in the middle of the night. Here are the GPS coordinates. Go get it. And then there's your 80 grand or whatever. And now you're cashing out cash. And there you go. Now you go spend it, you know?
Yeah, but how do you get that much? I mean, even let's say like $50 million, let's say, how do you even go about doing that? And then if that were the case, why wouldn't you just take an amount that doesn't get such big headlines? Stealing $5-10 million. You know, it's more comfortable. It's on the radar. A lot of these companies, maybe they have insurance. Well, I guess there is no insurance. Stupid.
Graham's like, ah, oh, that hacker shouldn't have been so greedy. You got to get away with $5 million just as easy. Well, I think the problem is like they could scatter that money into like kind of Kevin said, into like, let's say 100 smaller transactions, at which point it becomes so hard to trace all of them and hard to catch them. You could just micro transact it out of existence. So I really don't know. I think the only way is to hard fork. And I don't see Ethereum hard forking again. I don't see like a stablecoin hard forking. That just, I don't know how that would even work. So yeah. I don't know.
I like this theory. I mean, maybe I don't like the theory. That's probably the wrong phrase, but it makes me curious. Looking at the root cause of this, that Pauli Network says, like what caused it was the matter of really changing like a few lines of code. You would have had to somehow been so proficient in this Pauli Network code, I feel like, maybe not, but to know this whole, that it does kind of make you wonder what if it was an inside job? And now this is your cash out, you know? Just, I don't know.
And that tweet does not help.
No, not at all.
It's such a bad tweet. They should have really had somebody proofread that.
The tweet Andre, it was an inside point, job immediately.
Yeah. And Andre, your point about transacting this out of existence. I mean, imagine if you took $600 million. What is that? $600 million divided by how many Ethereum would that be? I don't know, a lot. But the point is, you send everybody, let's say, one Ethereum, or you send, you know, you just want to be generous, and you send like 100 million Americans or whatever the number is. Maybe not 100 million, but however many thousands, 2 million Americans get one Ether. You know what?
Right.
And who has the manpower to deal with enforcing all that and taking it back?
That would be fascinating. Imagine that, a crypto hacker turned into like a real life Robin Hood hero.
Yeah.
Steal.
But wouldn't they be able to? But eventually, like some person would have, like if everyone gets 1,000, let's just say, eventually at some point you're going to have someone with like 1 million. Wouldn't they just investigate the highest transactions, or like the highest amount, the highest dollar amount?
Yeah, but would they do to the other two, like 1,999 people? Like, they're not gonna go after them, I'm assuming.
No.
And who's responsible? Like, who says that? Like does Germany go after this DeFi thing, or does America go after this? Does America care to spend resources on DeFi? You know, look, I get it's a hack, so it's a crime of someone, but I mean, it's a crime of how many people? I mean, how many people are affected by a $600 million thing? If each person has $2,000, that's millions of people who are affected, you know?
All the Congress people that are against crypto are like, yes, this is awesome firepower when we regulate it.
I would not be surprised if they do nothing about this because they want to spin the narrative that, like, this is what you get. You want it, you know, you don't want regulation. All right, fine. We're not gonna look into this, but you're on your own. And then later down the line, they'll use that to their advantage. That's what I've been saying.
That's one of the biggest reasons they're not regulating something that should have been regulated since 2017. They're just like, let the kids play with the matches. When they burn the house down, we'll tell them I told you so. Like, right?
Yeah, that's a
good point.
Man, you know, it's just crazy to me to think, like, you know, this guy basically took $600 million and no one knows if anything's even going to happen to him criminally or whatever. Because, I mean, I was thinking about this story you guys were talking about, Inside Job, and it reminded me of the story at QT. So back when I was working at QT, there was this one worker, he was let go or whatever. And then all of a sudden we had a robbery at the Lake Wiley store. And whoever robbed the store definitely knew what they were doing because you needed a special key to turn in the safe so you could drop all the hundreds out of the safe. And you would only know that if you worked in like management at QT, right? And so next thing we know, you know, they find him and they arrest him and whatnot. And I think his buddy had a gun on him too. So I don't know if it was like an armed robbery at that point, but I don't know, you know, how much time that guy did. He might have done months. He might have done years to steal $1,200. And now we're talking about $600 million. And we don't even know if this guy's going to go to jail or anything. That's just like, it's just crazy to think that, right?
It is mind blowing. And I'm just surprised that Ethereum and, you know, like the price hasn't really crashed. I mean, you would think at this point, you know, people would be so scared. And I'm surprised we've gotten to a point where a headline like $600 million stolen doesn't just flash crash the market. That's,
you know what I'm more surprised about? It's if you look at the major news outlets, almost no one is covering it.
Yeah.
A lot of the attention right now is the infrastructure package. Almost nobody is talking about it, which I found unique. For the largest hack in history, for the fact that somehow gets like watered down and, like, you know, it's on CNBC, but you have to scroll all the way down. Weird.
Yeah, that is interesting. Speaking of the infrastructure bill, I didn't actually get to see that. Did you guys look at that?
Kevin.
We all defer to Kevin. He might have been the crazy one to
get. Yeah. You know what the biggest thing, look, this is, there are two infrastructure, quick, okay. Two infrastructure packages, hard infrastructure, soft infrastructure. This is the hard one with the money for roads, bridges, $7.5 billion for car chargers, airports, so on and so forth. The Senate passed it. Great. Wonderful. The negotiation ain't over. Because what happens now is this entire bill goes over to Nancy Pelosi's desk. And Nancy Pelosi's going to sit on it. And she's going to sit on it until the House comes up with the soft infrastructure package, which is where they want to extend the child tax credit and tax real estate and wealthy people more. And until they get all of those taxes, they're probably not going to do anything with the bill they just passed. So to me, the whole infrastructure thing is a big load of nothing until we actually get that next phase of the negotiation done, which the House comes back to work at the end of August.
Now, Kevin, why would there be such an impasse if Congress is essentially like a trifecta of Democrats? Like, what is the disagreement?
Yeah. So the big issue now is the there's this neutral person in Congress, in the Senate, the parliamentarian, who decides what the rules are, or when there's a dispute, determines what the solution is going to be. And Democrats wanted to use this measure called budget reconciliation two more times to pass whatever bills they wanted, ideally a soft infrastructure package and a hard infrastructure package. Senate parliamentarian said you can only do one more, which will be really interesting because they did get enough votes in the Senate to where they didn't have to pass this hard infrastructure bill through reconciliation. So this is where things are going to get very interesting because the Democrats are going to try to push the soft bill through with 50 votes. But at the same time, this is where things really get complicated now. Mitch McConnell's going to go, if you try to do that, we will sandbag the raising of the debt limit at the end of September and we'll shut down the government. So the real fun is coming.
I see. Got it. That makes a little bit more sense.
I was actually fairly surprised that taxes were not raised on corporations in this latest infrastructure package.
Yeah, it wouldn't be in this one. So all of the tax increases are going to go in the soft infrastructure package. They purposely put no tax increases on like corps or real estate or whatever in the hard one, just to kind of like, oh yeah, Republicans vote with us on it. Because here's the thing, in my opinion, the Republicans just got duped. They got enough Republicans on board to where they didn't need to use budget reconciliation on the hard infrastructure package. The only way that was going to happen was if there were no taxes. That was the only way it was going to happen. So I kind of feel like Republicans just got duped because Democrats still have that one budget reconciliation option.
Wouldn't it then go back to the Senate afterwards, though?
No. See, they passed they passed the soft bill. If the House passes it without making amendments, it doesn't go back to the Senate.
Right.
Now, in the Senate, Democrats alone could pass the soft version. That then goes over to the House. And the House, Nancy Pelosi, can go, I get to sign both of them. And Republicans, you know, then have to fight with the debt limit, basically.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. So am I correct in assuming the hard infrastructure bill is more to help everybody out, and then the soft one is we're going to sneak in all the other stuff, like you said, like the taxes and the stuff that's more debatable?
When you think of hard, think of just straight up bridges, roads, broadband, main things like that, like what you would expect infrastructure to be. Social infrastructure, soft, that's going to be like, hey, let's give you 3-4 more years of child tax credits, which is basically like $250 to $300 per month per child. Let's raise taxes and make the rich pay more, and so on and so forth.
Right. The more contentious stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they're going to get through with only Democrats, or that's what they plan to do. Which what's really interesting is there's a lot of talk and there are a lot of rumors about what if a Republican governor gets into California, Dianne Feinstein, who's 88, retires or for whatever reason, maybe a medical reason, has to leave. Now a Republican governor gets to appoint a replacement senator, and basically California could sandbag the entire country's Democratic Party, and Biden's administration could get sandbagged by just losing one senator.
Holy crap. Wait, so yeah. are you advancing, or did Newsom get recalled yet, or?
So on the election is on September 15th, 14th, and it's a single ballot. So it's, should he be recalled, and then who should replace him? And so lately we've actually been going up in the polls because I am, people know this, man, it's not a secret anymore. I am running as a JFK style Democrat in the middle, want to bring everybody together. I think one of the reasons we're advancing in the polls is because people are freaking out, like, oh my gosh, if there is a Republican governor, that means that Republican, that one senator could totally change national politics.
Wow.
Couldn't you still pick, though, a Republican senator as a Democratic governor?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't know.
That's so funny. Graham, I mean, come on, man. I don't even know that much about politics.
I don't know. Listen,
ridiculous.
I thought you're able to pick whoever you want. I didn't think it would have to come down to parties. I thought, like, I like this guy. I'm going to pick him. it should be like that. Listen, I think it should be based on a person's policies.
I think technically, I stand for that. I'm a big person about, hey, just look at the policies. You know, at my website. I'm not trying to plug it here, but just look at the policies. If you agree with them, vote that way. But in terms of policies, balance of political power, that's something else.
You could see the policies at bankrollcoffee.com. I'm kidding.
There you go. You guys are making me cough.
So, Kevin, you're telling me don't buy Caterpillar stock yet. No CAT quite yet.
I Caterpillar. I actually sold it, I think, a while ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too soon. Too soon, in my opinion. I mean, like, hey, you know what? Maybe it'll get pre-priced in, right? Oh, gosh, it's cough. But, you know, I saw Tesla rose after the infrastructure bill passed. It went up to like 720 or something like that. And I'm like, why is this going up? It ain't a done deal yet. And pretty soon after that, it's just like right back down. I think people realize, like, oh yeah, wait, we still have to wait for the House. You know, it's going to be a while.
No, that makes sense. It's crazy because, you know, sometimes I don't even think we realize like the state of the infrastructure in the United States, because a lot of times we don't experience it. Like for me, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, a very newish city, right? Nowadays, I live in Vegas, and like this whole city's basically been built in the last 30 years. So we have great roads for the most part, great highways, things like that. Almost everything's new. But man, you go up to the north, you go out to the East Coast, it's just crazy. It's like night and day, and so many bridges and roads and highways and everything needs to be worked on in this country in a massive way. And then the airports, don't even get me started on some of the airports, right? Yeah. And we need it done. It's just, it seems like it's always like, we're going to do it. And then it's like, I feel like that's been like the past 10, 15 years. It's been like that. And it's like, where's the real big, huge, like, we're changing the United States. We're going to fix all this stuff. And it's just,
Well, speaking of this infrastructure stuff, are any of you guys like trying to time the market by buying or selling any of those infrastructure stocks? Because like that's not my style. I don't really do that. I don't know if anything, Jeremy, maybe Kevin, I don't know if you guys try to time anything.
Not with infrastructure, more with Delta. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's so much talk about people like, oh, Delta's just going to go up and then it's going to go down again because like it did in the United Kingdom. But the United Kingdom.
Are you talking about Delta stock? Or are you talking about stock, Delta? Sorry.
Delta. Yeah. Sorry. Like, not trying to time anything with infrastructure. Am willing to time the Delta variant impacts on the market, but you know, the big question right now is Delta going to surge longer in America than it did in the United Kingdom, or are we just going to have that quick up and down? That's the big thing right now.
But is Delta like the scariest variant now? Or I thought there was like a different one. I don't even know what they're called anymore. They have like Pokemon names.
Lambda. Lambda's Lambda, the other one. Right.
No. Yeah, and then I was hearing about something past Lambda. But the numbers are getting weird. So yesterday it shows that we had 245,000 new cases. But then the previous day it was saying like 40,000. And so it was like, whoa, maybe we're out of the woods. And then all of a sudden – and so I'm like, maybe they messed up the numbers and maybe they were supposed to
That's the weekend.
Yeah, part of that in the previous day. I don't know. Very, very strange, but I thought it was weird that
– It's all because of the weekend. So like here, I'll pull it up. If you go it's always Saturdays and Sundays. I don't know why. I mean, it must just be like a way they process or report the testing or whatever. But this has been true for, gosh, quite a while here. Back in all the STEMI update days, this was always sort of the pattern, is that you always get the weekend days have these really low report days. And so if you go out, that's just always consistent here. So, but that average just exploded here. And yep. Usually the Monday report is actually the lowest of the week. So in theory, Saturday, which is Friday's data, should be the highest spike if we continue on the same trend.
Yeah, and the other important number for folks at home watching to pay attention to outside of just that number is hospitalization and ICU numbers. And those numbers have jumped up dramatically and reached a new high when those were reported a few days ago.
Have you guys looked at any of the death rates? I know that's probably one of the
Death rates have jumped certainly versus where they were a month ago. Like if you look at how many deaths were happening a month ago, it's jumped, but it hasn't jumped nearly as dramatic. I think because honestly, a lot of older people have gotten the shots. So a lot of them just aren't as affected if they are getting it because those are the ones that are most at risk. It doesn't mean you can't die if you're young or something like that. So we all know that that's possible, but it's really the elderly that are the most at risk. And most of those folks have gotten their shots. So right. But the hospitalization ICU numbers are the important ones to keep in mind because those are the ones that, you know, if there was any possibility of us shutting down or whatnot, it would be because the hospitals and ICUs are getting too full and they would be like, oh, man, you know. So I don't know. That's something to consider, at least if you're going to look at the numbers. So yeah, it just seems like no one cares. That's what, I don't really hear much talk about this. I had CNBC on all day yesterday. I didn't really hear them talking about the numbers much. They're definitely not politicizing this. Like the previous one, I could tell you that much, man. You know, I don't want to go too much on that. But last time, we know what it was, and they're not politicizing this time at all. And it just seems like, whatever. Let's just let it go.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It'll be interesting to see what the winter numbers look like. Like that's what we're in for. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the next couple of weeks are going to be the most important, because you saw 245, you know. I mean, that's a number we haven't seen since the peak of Roni Rona back in, what was that, December, January? You know, you haven't seen over 200,000 in a long, long time. So I don't know. We'll see. Hope for the best. But I don't know, man. It scares me because it just seems like no one's like really paying attention or caring. And it's just like, I'm just like, are we going to get like, you know, blindsided by this thing, and all of a sudden, like one day, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, guys, all of a sudden we're limiting the economy, we're shutting down again, and it just comes out of nowhere. Or is this just going to be like we turn a blind eye to it, and hospitalizations and ICU numbers and the cases can fly high, and we're like, yeah,
whatever. Right, that's a really great point, and that's partially probably because it's not fun, because we're not politicizing this, so it's just like the news are like, oh, we'll just put it on the back burner until it does become interesting. And I think partially because we're just so sick of staying indoors. We're just like, let's not make this a big story. Let's just pretend it's not happening.
That's what I think is a big part of it, is that a lot of people spent the last year without doing anything. And now that they're getting that like little taste of freedom back, I think giving that up is an issue for a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, the news covers what people are watching. And if people are less interested in COVID coverage, then I think they'll cover it less.
Right.
That's a good point, Kevin. That's a good point.
Kind of like views on YouTube.
Yeah. man. So, hey, you guys buying any stocks or cryptos out there? Any moves you guys are making?
Fisker, guys. Did you see Fisker?
Saw Fisker.
Finally. Yeah. So this has been a stock that I just every now and then I'll throw a little money into it. Nothing crazy, but yeah, a few months ago when it dropped down to like 10, 11 bucks, and you know what? And I was down at the time because I think my average buying at that time was like $15. Just kept buying more. It slowly started going up. I was shocked. I still don't know exactly what caused the sudden run up.
And is that Fisker from Fisker Karma?
The car? Yeah, FSR. Oh.
Interesting. What's the interest in that stock? Are they coming back? Because I remember their original car. I think it was they stopped selling, right?
Yeah, no, they had some. They did. They came back. They started selling the Karma again. Really cool looking car. Coming out.
It always looked like the car had a mustache in the front. Like if you pull up a picture, that car legit looks like it just has like a sir mustache on it.
It does. They're a good car. They're not as advanced and sophisticated as Tesla is. But you know what? I think a lot of people see them as an underdog, and maybe they have a chance. And a lot of people think, well, Tesla's so expensive, I missed out on that. But I could roll the dice and see if Fisker could be something similar. That's what
Kevin, has CCIV, have they gone into production? And by the way, has that merger officially happened now between Lucid and CCIV? Is that a thing of the past? I haven't tracked
it. Yeah, the merger's done. They're still working on their beta vehicles. They got to ramp. Otherwise, the stock's going to sit sideways for a while. But, you know, that's always the hardest part, is getting your first sold vehicles off the lot. And I think there are a lot of people excited. That'll be a big moment, because that'll be, I think, I think that'll be the first United States pure EV competitor to Tesla. So I can't call it.
Well, so CCIV is expected to beat this Fisker company to the next up, I guess you can say. Well, and I don't know about, you're talking about an upstart EV, because I'm like, there's been plenty of EVs created by companies that are already existing, but you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But you're a new EV. Yep.
Yeah.
Like, any kind of company that just does EVs. Like who else do we have? I mean, there's NIO in China, you know, Ford and GM, they do some EVs, but in terms of new car companies, nothing else in the US other than Tesla.
Ford's interesting. I mean, you know, their EV products are getting pretty darn interesting. Obviously, they got the Mustang product out there in the market now, the SUV. Mm-hmm. From my understanding, they got the F-Series coming here, and that's going to ramp. So I don't know. I think Ford's actually I mean, if I had to put money on it, I would say they're probably number, they're looking at probably number two EVs at the moment, at least if we're looking at United States. I don't want to speak about worldwide because that gets crazy. But right now, I'm like, who's really ahead of Ford as far as EV goes?
What about Rivian? Did you guys talk about that one?
Yeah, I don't know. Like that's a whole other thing. Amazon, from my understanding, made a big stake in them, if not bought them out, if I recall. And then Amazon, I think, wants to use them to make electric package trucks, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Ford's just got such a big audience already. They've got such a good history behind them. The F-150 is such a brand. The Mustang, that Mach-E, I was shocked, by the way. Originally, that Mach-E came out, I hated it. I thought it was the ugliest looking thing, but they're selling. I think they were the second most bought electric SUV, believe it or not, is that Ford Mustang Mach-E. I'm blown away. But I see them. I see them everywhere. You're driving around, especially in Vegas. Driving around, you see these things. It's impossible to drive down the freeway and not see a Mustang Mach-E. So,
I think the Model Y is cooler, though.
I agree, but you know what? Ford has a very loyal brand, as does Tesla. So Ford right now just knows the numbers.
And not every single person's going to buy, you know, a Tesla. It's just not going to happen, right? It doesn't matter how great the Tesla is. It's not going to happen. It's no different than, I mean, we would all assume every single person would have an iPhone, but yet iPhone, even in the United States, has, what, 50%, 56% market share? Like, that to me is crazy because I feel like almost everybody I know has an iPhone, and yet they only have maybe half the market share. So
I think the biggest thing people sleep on that don't own electric vehicles, and this is, I think, for me, the biggest consideration, is just the charging infrastructure. It's just like for every other manufacturer, it's just not there. Mm-hmm. It just has the charging. That's the most important thing. Like, I don't want to wait in line 2 hours before I start to charge.
That's a great point. I mean,
most of the other chargers, they don't, at least that I'm aware of, they don't have the, first of all, a lot of them aren't fast. Of the supercharger networks, I don't, most of the time when I see cars at them, I just see them, it feels like they're there all day long. Like the Tesla one, like, you know, the app's like, we're going to charge you if you don't get out of here, you know, charge to 80%, then go. So you get that turnover. I think Tesla's really got that charging infrastructure down. I'm sure the other companies are trying to catch up, but boy, yeah, I mean, if you went, I just looked, Ford here in my area has got a couple Mach-E's, but I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, well, if you owned one, where would you charge it? And I just got a bunch of slow chargers around, and that's boring. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah,
and I don't know about Ford's charging at home. I don't know if it's just like you do it the same way you would do a Tesla. That's something I haven't looked into, but that's
I'm sure. You plug it into the wall, man. Like your plug. When are you going to order that adapter so you can plug it into the freaking wall?
Kevin, thank you. I ordered it, and also I checked on Amazon to see if it was cheaper, and it was actually like triple the price on Amazon versus the Tesla website, which I was shocked because, you know, you would assume old Tesla website probably going to be the most expensive. It was triple the price on Amazon. So thank you, Kevin. I ordered directly from Tesla. It's coming Thursday. I can't wait. But the problem is I don't think I'm going to be able to plug it in because I told Graham this. When I plug the car in on that side, the breaker goes.
Yeah, but you're gonna that's a dedicated circuit that you have. That plug that's there. I promise you, you're fine. It's designed for that, bro. You're fine.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate you, man. I can't wait. I'm gonna be charging these cars so fast. I'm gonna be driving all over this neighborhood.
Wait, what is this plug you guys are talking about? Should I get one too? What is this?
Jeremy has a laundry plug. It's a dedicated circuit for EVs where it is, but he's been charging it through an extension cord off of 120 regular outlet. I'm Jeremy, it's right there, but you have to buy an adapter. Sorry, man.
Okay. I appreciate you, Kevin. For that, I'm going to tell you about a great stock. It's called Tattoo Chef. Did you buy yet? Hey, no, in all seriousness, the chef is reporting in less than 48 hours. I'm nervous, guys. And here's why I'm nervous. The stock's been going up a lot this week. It went up big yesterday. Today, the market was down. It wasn't up big today, but it was still up. And I'm like, man, is it going to keep going up into earnings? And then it's like down 15% after earnings.
Also, because Jeremy invested his soul into Tattoo Chef. So this point.
Oh, man.
How much of your net worth is in it now?
What's that, Andre?
What percentage of the portfolio is TTCF?
I don't know, probably 15% ish. Okay. So, but yeah, so I don't know, that the earnings should be interesting, man. That is gonna be big for me. So,
are you nervous because Beyond Meat got whacked?
Not as nervous, because there's a big difference between TTCF and Beyond Meat. Beyond Meat's having a lot of trouble innovating. Like, I go to the store and I'm like, what has Beyond Meat done in the last 2 years? Like, it seems like the same products, the same amount of shelf space for the most part, that they had last year or the previous year, whereas Tattoo Chef's in a whole different growth mode, and they're launching SKUs left and right. They're getting more SKUs in stores, and they're just innovating at a crazy rapid clip. And Beyond Meat, I'm like, I'm just not seeing. And that's why I got out of Beyond Meat and went all in Tattoo Chef, because I'm like, this company is innovating at so much more of a rapid pace than Beyond Meat.
I didn't know you sold, because I still remember your Beyond Meat video from a while ago. Yeah. It was actually, I'm pretty sure it was last November, and I know it was last November because I was playing RuneScape and listening to you while I was playing RuneScape. Anyway, and yeah, you were talking about how their branding is so ubiquitous and they're everywhere.
Yeah, and I don't want to be negative on Beyond Meat. It's just when I look at them versus Tattoo Chef, it's like night and day. When I see the pace of innovation at Tattoo Chef, and also you look at the valuations, Beyond Meat has a huge valuation on it. Like, I don't know, I don't want to speak on it today, but it might be $10 billion or so. You know, Tattoo's like $1 billion something company, right?
Right. So sorry, did I cut you off?
No, go ahead.
If somebody who's like watching this video is not invested in Beyond Meat, do you have like a 1 minute elevator spiel for like convincing them, or is it too high at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to like you know, talk super positive about them, because I have
not Beyond Meat. So sorry, TTCF.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm speaking on that all the time, but they're just innovative, man. They're innovative. They're building their brand. They're getting in more stores, more SKUs everywhere. You know, you're not going to be able to miss the product. You know, how well the SKUs sell. So far, it's been great. Target said it's the best frozen food launch in the history of Target. But, you know, I'm not going to get too jacked up about that. But
so buy or sell below $20.
Well, as a long-term investor, I'm always going to buy. Short-term, I don't know, man. Like, you know, it could go to 18, it could go 17. I don't know. It was at 15 back in April 20th, 420. It was in the 15s. So I don't know. In the short term, it's going to be volatile. Wall Street's coming to that stock, though. And Kevin, I don't know if you know, but two analysts only cover Tattoo Chef right now, which for most stocks, you know, you're talking 8, 10, and for the bigger stocks, obviously, like a Tesla, you're talking like 50, 60 analysts, right? Yeah. So the great thing about those Wall Street analysts, when they come into a stock, and I think this is important for folks to remember if you're ever buying small caps, although I don't like analysts that much, they're important because they're always talking about your stock. They're upgrading, downgrading. They're coming out with research reports about the stock. And so they're kind of like a necessary evil of Wall Street to actually promote your stock. And a lot of, as silly as it sounds, a lot of funds and high net worth individuals will not buy a stock unless an analyst comes out and upgrades it. And that's why you see crazy moves up. Smile Direct Club today was down 24% STC. It was because they missed numbers, but also every single analyst on the stock downgraded the stock today. And that's how you get a stock to sell off 24% in a day. Wow. So
Jeremy talks about two analysts on TTCF. He's talking about both of his YouTube channels.
Yeah. Financial Education 1 and number 3.
That's right.
Oh, gosh. It's just Kevin and me. Imagine it's just average.
Those people. The analysts.
Hey, Kevin, what's your opinion on analysts? I would love to hear your opinion as being somebody that's, you know, in the stock market. How do you feel about the analyst community?
I don't care about their prices, but I love their research. I mean, I love it because it's you get you should always challenge your own theses and your own opinion. Like, for example, if an analyst said something amazing about TTCF and they're like, hey, they're working on, you know, mixing this into their product, whatever. And I looked at that, I'm like, oh, wow, that could actually lead to revenue 10xing more than I thought or whatever. That's important, right? So it is a good way of getting perspective. I think just blindly following the price guidance is stupid because they change their minds all their time, right? But the actual underlying research, I enjoy.
Yeah, I got a little difference of opinion. I have no respect for almost all analysts on Wall Street. And, you know, Tesla's a perfect example. When I was buying that stock in 2019, man, all these analysts, they were always backwards looking.
And they would always talk about what Tesla had for market share now, what they were doing in the past, and the past numbers and stuff like that. And it was never like looking forward. And I understand from an analyst perspective, you kind of got to be in the present or looking at the past numbers. But a lot of forecasting, especially growth stocks, what's really important is the future. Like no one cares about the past. It's all about the future, right? And so that's the one kind of pushback. And then they also, man, if one comes out negative, then it seems like they all start coming out negative. And then as soon as the stock starts to move up, next thing you know, they're upgrading, and then the stock keeps going up, and they have to upgrade to the next level. And it's like they all follow each other around.
Now, our analysts, I know they're required to disclose their positions, but there's no like requirement for them to, like if they're short sellers, to disclose that. Like if you're a short seller and you have a negative sentiment, are you supposed to disclose that? Or could they just be kind of manipulating the price and be like,
Yeah, they're supposed to. What was the one? It was Hindenburg Research. They short everything. And it's like in the fine print, you see that at the bottom or somewhere that they have a short position on this. They're bearish. But they all disclose it. Do people pay attention? Probably not.
I mean, I've seen the disclosure of like, oh, I'm long or I'm short. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's like a point. Oh, where's Kevin?
Whoa, Kevin. Did you go away, Kevin? Kevin.
I don't know what happened.
Uh-oh.
Anyway,
man. So, yeah. So anyways, by the way, I want to make clear about this. The Hindenburg thing, this is too close to my face.
Sorry.
Oh, there we go.
It's too close to my face.
That was getting weird, man. It was like right here. So anyways, the Hindenburg, by the way, in that whole situation, man, this is throwing me off now that the whole four squares are different. Lost my train of thought. The Hindenburg report, by the way, they're not analysts. That's like kind of almost like an investment fund, just to be clear about that, Graham. Okay. So usually analysts work for Bank of America, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, or like specific investment banks and things like that. So, but anyways, I don't know. It is what it is. But is there any, there's no professional crypto analysts yet, right? Right, Andre? It's just everybody's got
not like official ones, I don't think. No, not like.
Oh, well, I mean, look at like Yassine, who works at ARK Invest, right? Absolute analyst on crypto, and they publish really good papers, so they're there.
I figured it's just a matter of time before the big investment banks add crypto experts or analysts to cover those, especially if more of them are interested in buying them. What's the state of like Wall Street money coming in crypto?
Kevin's made a great point. I actually don't read those. I don't see those, crypto analysts, but I'd love to see that resource. And I'd just love to see like crypto brokerages display their ratings, and I'd love to see their perspectives. I haven't seen that on anything that I use, but I don't know what Kevin's using.
Oh, I mean, you can follow Yassine on Twitter. Yeah.
Okay.
You follow ARK really closely, right, Kevin?
I like to. I think they're great. Yeah.
Okay. I got something to show you guys here.
Ooh.
Show you. Okay.
Yeah.
You ready for this? So it was either two episodes or three episodes ago, I showed this to the guys. It was unbelievable. Oh, yeah. I was down $63,000 on this. Okay. And look at where we are at now. Oh, I need to go this way a little bit. We are now positive $7,700.
Wow.
There you go, man.
That's like winning a jackpot at the casino man.
One day that'll happen to my Tesla.
It's just crazy how volatile – it just shows you how crazy volatile crypto is. It's just in its own category. It makes stocks look like it's just not even –
I wish Coinbase would do that.
Yeah. Oh. Well, good job holding, Jeremy. Seriously, good job, man. I'm happy for you. That's awesome.
Thanks.
You deserve it. You held through the crap.
I think Coinbase – I think Coinbase, by the way, eventually will get back there.
They will.
I just been – anytime Coinbase dips a little bit, I'll just buy – I'll nibble at it. I'll buy
a certain price. Do you have a certain price in mind, Graham, that you're like, oh, this price, I need to buy some?
I kind of feel it out. I mean, when it was under like 230, I'd buy a little bit more. Above 230, not so much. Robinhood is something I'm just keeping an eye on, though. I'm really interested to see what that does.
Yeah.
Good.
Crazy to see it bounce back so much on the second day there.
Yeah. Now, it seems like it's starting to normalize a bit, so it might level off somewhere in the 40s. We'll see. Maybe not.
Well, I like how Kevin played it though. That was smart. I wanted to, but I just like I think I was trapped. I think I was in Hawaii or what was happening. I don't know. I missed that second day though. And I was like, I know that stock's gonna pump, but day one, it's just like people are just gonna destroy it.
You did a swing on it, Kevin, or what happened?
Yeah, I IPO'd, fell from like $38 to $33.50 something or whatever. So I bought it at $34.21. The thing runs up like 3 or 4 days later to $70, something ridiculous. I'm like, this is such a stupid valuation. This is dumb. So I sold calls against the whole position. And now it's like $55 or whatever. So I played that one on both ends. I don't feel good about it.
That's
so in hindsight, you look back and you're like, oh, if I had gone all in on that, you know, but you can't do that.
Kevin, are you okay with disclosing how much money you've made on it? If not, that's fine. I just don't know if that's
you know, I don't know. I'd have to look. I mean, it's hundreds of K. Oh, sorry, I didn't
mean to say that. Hundreds of K. Wow.
Yeah, but hey, you know, some trades go well, some don't. I would say most of my trades this year have been very positive. The only thing that's really been suffering, the two things that have been suffering for me are Tesla call options and Pinterest call options. Everything else has been printing money. I mean, I almost made I almost made $400,000 on Enphase just this year, right? It's just one stupid stock, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, my Tesla call options are bleeding by a few $100,000, so it's all a balance, you know.
Yeah, but that's impressive on the hood in such a short amount of time. That's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And then, or how much are you getting into selling calls or even selling writing put options?
Yeah, I'm all over it, like. Okay. I'm trying to get out of options as much as possible. So if I can sell them, and by get out of options, I mean get out of my leaps. This is why I don't like your 2024 idea, just in fairness. Like, I think our IV is just going straight down, and that's not doing anything good for options pricing. My Tesla call options, just so you know, like Tesla call options, they were I bought them when Tesla was $715. Tesla's like $715 now, and they're down like 25%. And it's just because of the IV crush. So, and I think that's going to continue. So if I could sell here and just sell options, which I have been doing on my shares, I'll do that all day long. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend over a couple of weekends ago, and we were just running through all these stocks that I can't disclose because I promised I wouldn't disclose them. But where you can get essentially on writing was it? I think we're talking about selling puts, actually.
Yeah.
Where you can get 10% return on investment in less than a month. I mean, we're talking 2-3 weeks on some of these stocks. Okay. Yeah. I'll disclose one of them. Just one of them. The only one is Wish Stock. Okay. Wish Stock was one of them where you can get disgusting returns, and you run that on an annualized basis. It's crazy, man.
It's almost every single like SPAC. Or the more momentum-based stocks, hands down. SoFi, I think TTCF looks pretty good. Almost all of these that have mass price volatility price, you know, built in. Oh, yeah. Easy.
Are these mostly just penny stocks or?
Oh, no. No. But I would say under $10 billion market cap, Andre. So kind of in that $1 billion to $10 billion. And some of those stocks are even above that we were looking at. But most of them that you could get some crazy returns on, the $1 billion to kind of $10 billion crowd for sure. So, but yeah, in terms of like if I buy straight up calls that are dated out 2 years, let's say, like when I go September, October, when I buy calls, I have to be unbelievably confident that stock price is going to move up. Like, it has to be disgustingly confident. Like, the valuation has to be way down. The growth expected has to be way up. Like, you know, all the stars have to align for me to even take a chance on that.
Like, which stocks?
Well, so Corsair is definitely one of the ones at the leader of the pack, I would say. Mm. If that one's under $30 when 2024 calls come out, and obviously I'll have to look at the pricing on it too, but that's definitely one I could see, because we're talking about a Ford PS16. We're talking about what I would expect big growth, you know? So, hey, the dog makes an appearance.
Rito. Hey, buddy.
That's just too cute.
Sorry. Oh, there goes little Rito.
Aww.
Our views just doubled.
There you go.
We jumped from 7,200 viewers to 14,400.
Yeah,
I'll have more and more.
So, yeah, situations like that, you know, where the valuation,
really hitting down. You know, when if when falls back to, let's say, 90 or 85, 80, that's one I could be interested in, because I mean the Roni Ronan thing's not going to last forever. Let's just hope it doesn't, right? So that's one I'm potentially interested in. So it has to be, the valuation has to be beaten down, and I expect the growth to come. So let me give you an example of one I wouldn't be interested in, would be like Amazon. Even though I'm buying some Amazon stock straight up right now, not really too interested in calls, because it has a 60 Ford P on it or whatever, right? So, and then Amazon, you never know. They can all of a sudden be like, oh, we don't care about making money again. We're just going to invest for the future. And then all of a sudden you get a year or two where the profitability dips, and then people get freaked out, and then all of a sudden the stock doesn't move, right? So that's one, although I'm buying the stock straight up right now, I wouldn't buy calls on it, because it's just, you know, so little game there. But Graham, you need to start selling call. You need to start selling put options and doing covered calls, man. I think that's perfect for you.
I'll do it as an experiment for the vlog. You know what? Actually, this week I could come over. We'll do that. We'll vlog it, and I'll try it on one.
That'd be fun. Yeah, make sure you bring your professional options trader with you. We all know who that is. Shout out to Jack, one of the top option traders in all of Summerlin, Nevada. Experts.
Experts.
One of the top experts we know. Yeah. And
a year's worth of experience, expert.
Yeah. Kevin, you know, have you ever thought about, like, now this is kind of, it seems like a year where you're getting more and more into options. I think it'd be cool if you set a goal going in next year. Like, I want to make a certain amount of money from just, like, let's say, selling puts or covered calls and stuff like that. It would be intriguing.
Yeah, it would be. It just becomes a job. You know, a lot of people, they wheel options, and that they sit there, and it's just like every 2 weeks they're rotating options over and over and over again. And that's cool. Like, you want to do that. But it's just not, like, quite frankly, shares are nice. There's a very nice, you know, pleasant safety with just buy the shares and sit there and have a little diversified portfolio. Doesn't have to be as diverse as index funds, but pick your favorite 40 and a few different industries or whatever, and there you go, is an option. That's pretty diversified. You know, I know sometimes if you want to grow faster, maybe you want to start with like 10 or 20 or even 5, but it also creates a lot more stress. So I think it depends on the person's personality.
But I feel like Kevin, you would make so much money with just selling a few covered calls and, like, the, I don't know, in the money, like, super safe. I don't know. I feel like you make a couple $1,000s easily a month doing that. Yeah. And doesn't Warren Buffett make over $5 billion selling covered calls with his portfolio? Yeah, he makes, like, ridiculous amounts of money doing that.
I don't know anything about that. That's
I didn't know that. I didn't think he touched options.
No, I think that's how he uses them to enter into positions.
Sell puts or covered call. Okay.
Yeah. That's not traditionally true, but maybe since Todd and Ted came over, maybe they do that more. Kind of his two helpers.
His go-to.
That are helping run the fund, which can make sense. I could definitely see that. So especially selling puts, because then you can, you know, if the stock goes down a bunch, then you got to buy it. So the only way you get really screwed is if the stock goes down so much that it's like, man, why didn't I just keep the money on the sideline to wait to buy this stock, right? So let's say I was selling puts on Tattooed Chef. If Tattooed Chef goes from 21 to $15, you know, the premium I made, it wasn't that great, right? I should have just waited on the sideline till it fell to 15 and buy. So that's the way you kind of get messed. But I don't know. I was actually talking with a friend recently, and we were talking about, like, using it as almost like a retirement plan, where the way he was looking at it is actually a lot less risky of a strategy versus just owning stock straight up. So
I'm not going to lie. Options trading is so complicated, because when you're like selling puts or selling calls, it's like you have to like think of the opposite. It's crazy. I'm still getting used to it, because I don't really mess with that stuff. But I did a video on it recently with my friend. And I'm still trying to like learn it, but it's still like anytime you say it, it's not an automatic translation. I have to like think in my head. I'm like, wait, that means, oh, right, that means this. Selling puts is, I think, buying a stock, right?
Unless it runs away from you. You basically get paid to promise to buy it if it falls below a certain point. But I mean, I just want to caution, though. There's so many people who have these, oh, well, I can do this, this riskless options strategy over here. I could do this. And this is, there's always a risk no matter what option strategy you go with. And it could be as simple as, hey, you go sell puts on Tattooed Chef and you promise you'll buy it under $20. Now you get a big credit. Let's say you get a $50,000 credit and you tie up, I don't know, 300 grand of collateral or whatever. Now the stock runs to $40, never goes down to that level again. Great. You got your credit, but you just missed out on some big tendies, right? Mm-hmm. In every scenario, there's a way you could get screwed with options. Sure. And with options, you're always up against the clock. Whereas with shares, you just have to time the market once. You get in and you forget about it.
That's a good point.
The nice thing about being the seller, though, the clock is kind of on your time versus being a buyer, where the clock's against you. So,
But then you're constantly sitting there like, oh man, should I close that contract out and move it over to this other opportunity? Right? It makes you more of an active investor. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, for sure. And you got to do the math, man. The math is very, very important, on those options trades and trying to figure out, well, exactly what type of return will I get on this one versus this one? What's the risk level? So no matter what, it's still a work, I guess you can say, you know, it's just a different type versus.
But at least people can get two free stocks with Webull when they use the link down below in the description.
Yes, that's right, man. That's right. Have you got your free stocks yet, Andre?
I got all my free stonks.
Your free stocks.
What else do we have to pitch?
Eclipse Channel.
Eclipse.
We forgot to pitch that in the beginning. We got it. The Eclipse Channel is down below in the description. It posts a new video every single day. So actually twice a day sometimes. So go and add the Eclipse Channel down below in the description. And while you're at it, you may as well hit the like button too. And subscribe.
And then Rito will make an appearance.
Believe it or not, like half the people watching are not subscribed.
Too many silvers.
And it'll want to go to Graham's house.
Yeah. I know, man. Yeah, Graham's got all the golds and the silvers.
One gold.
One gold? No, you got two golds.
No. Second channel's at almost 800,000.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Another probably year to go.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. And then you got a lot of channels in the pipeline that are going gold too. So we can't forget about those. And then we needed to get a diamond for Graham too. So then one of us can get a diamond play button, man. Could you imagine that? Somebody that's a finance YouTuber gets a diamond play button.
That'd be crazy.
That would be a monumental thing for the whole finance space.
Yeah, but I could see that take another 5 years. Another 5 years, and honestly, and another like few viral Tesla videos.
Yes.
And by then,
plaid.
He may not be the first.
What?
I was like, by then, he may not be the first. I'm just kidding.
Just wait till the TikTok kids come on finance YouTube, man.
Like none of us take us all over. Yeah, it's gonna be them, man. I can see that.
You're gonna be like, oh, we hit 1 million views every video, man. Yeah. Lame guys talking about your whatever fundamentals. It's about the next pump, man.
It's all about yoloing into TTCF.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. No, I mean no. Oh gosh. So anything else you guys are looking at this week, thinking about buying, any moves you're making? VGX, you're loading up the boat on that, you said, right, Kevin? And what else is there?
No.
You know what? I did finally, this is totally off topic, but I think I've told all of you it's not really an investment, kind of. I bought the entire collection of Goosebumps, the original Goosebumps books.
No. Goosebumps.
I finally, after a month of looking online, it came up like 2 hours ago. I bought it.
Okay. True story. Graham and I were at sushi and he's like, Andre, I made a really big, it's a cool purchase, but I don't want you to get the same thing. So promise you're not going to tell, you're not going to do the same thing as I am. I'm like, I'm not going to make a promise because we really do think alike and things. I'm like, he's like, no, you got to promise. I'm like, okay, fine. What is it? He's like, I bought a set of Goosebump books. And I'm just like, oh, okay.
Listen, though, it's the original Goosebumps books from, like, I think it was like 1995 to the year 2000. There were 62 books. It's really hard to find them in brand new condition. They almost don't exist. So what I want to do is get these books and frame them on the wall in the hallway.
Yeah, that's cool. Wow. It's all about the Animorphs. You guys remember those?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
This is one of the reasons, by the way, and look, I love that you got Goosebumps because that's like childhood memories, right? Yeah. For me. But it's one of the reasons I actually like that we have a smaller house because Lauren would just go spend all the money on trying to fill up all of these extra hallways and rooms and stuff. No offense to Lauren. She does beautiful work and stuff. But, A, we only have two rooms for couches, Lauren. Yes, we can't buy that other couch. You know, all of a sudden, you got like a 5,000 or 6,000 square foot house. You know, you're going to the furniture store that much more. You know?
Kevin, you're playing on level 10, man. You're the man. You're playing on the top level.
Hey, I think we need to downsize our house.
Be a minimalist. Just a one bedroom. That's all you need. One bedroom and bunk beds.
She's going to be pissed if she sees this.
Kevin, one last thing I want to discuss before we end tonight's video. You were at the Wynn Mall. I saw you post an Instagram video saying they were out of all the Rolexes, out of all the handbags. What happened in that situation?
Yeah. So, Graham, I was talking to Graham about this, and apparently it's common for Rolexes to have very few, or the Rolex stores to have very few men's or whatever out to try to create this like impression and demand or whatever. But the two people were there. They were saying at the Rolex store that COVID has really slowed down their ability to sell because it's just things are taking so much longer to come. And it's like, maybe in 3 months we'll get another shipment, but COVID's screwing us up. So Lauren was over at looking around at the Prada store, and the person who was working there, who's, by the way, a subscriber, I think, of all of us, which was awesome, he was saying that they were purposefully pricing the company was purposefully pricing handbags around stimulus check payment amounts that people were getting. So whether it was like $1,600, $1,400, $1,200, or even slightly out of reach to get them to spend money on those. And that stimulus people have been the best customers for Prada lately. But because of that, combined with COVID supply chain shortages, they're out of like bread and butter stuff. And it's just normal bags they usually have. They don't have. It's everything taking longer to get. It's crazy.
I can't decide if that's evil or genius.
Yeah,
it's smart. Listen, the customer, they're going to spend the money if they're going to spend the money. So you may as well price things around what people want to buy. And listen, nobody's forcing them to go to the store, buy a handbag. They're going out of their way. You have to go out of your way. You have to park. You have to walk. You have a lot of times to think, like, is this the right choice? There are plenty of reasons to back out before walking in the store and making that purchase.
And they give you a free vaccine card. Take us away. Let's do this.
Yeah. Hey, Graham, take us away, man.
All right, guys. So with that said, thank you so much for joining us this week. Really means a lot. As always, make sure to hit the like button, subscribe, add the Clips channel down below in the description. Get all the great stuff down below in the description as well. Thank you again for watching. Subscribe. You have to do that really quick. Just hit the subscribe button, and we'll see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale. For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.